Now, if this young lady was in Mexico, she'd be very popular. She'd be called an abogado. If she was in Great Britain, she'd be called a barrister.
Yes, correct.
Or a barristress, I guess. So why don't you introduce our special guest?
Oh, happily. With us is Sarah Lee Parrish. I'll leave the line for you. I know you've been chomping at the bit to say it.
I have no line.
Yes, you do.
No, I don't.
All right, you will.
Okay.
Her latest legal thriller, Guilt of Innocence, placed second in the New York Law Journal's National Fiction Writing Contest. She's with us today to discuss the legalized marijuana business and its inability to conduct banking commerce. Also, customers can't purchase items with a bank card. And is that about to change? Welcome, Sarah. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, it's great to be here. Thank you for having me on your show.
Oh, hey, I've been looking forward to talking with you for weeks now.
I love being surrounded by smart women now. I've got smart women to the left of me, smart women to the right of me, and I can just be the idiot in the middle of the Oreo.
Your words. Sarah, this is something that I know that the pot industry legalized. They've been fighting for the ability to have bank accounts,
literally, yeah.
Because they are obviously dealing with cash, and I had never thought of the second step that you couldn't buy from a dispensary with, a debit or credit card. Is that correct?
That is correct. It's a huge issue for the industry and in Oklahoma, for patients who are receiving prescriptions to purchase it.
And I've never thought about that end of it.
So even in the states where it's not legal for recreational use, the states that it's legal for medical use, they're not even allowed to do that. That's ridiculous.
Well, and technically, I mean, as you both know, it remains illegal under federal law. And because of that, it has some repercussions that are especially pronounced in the banking realm. Now, what some people don't know is that at the same time the Cole memo was issued, which I trust most of your listeners are familiar with that because our current Attorney General, Jeff Sessions, has done his level best to overturn that Cole memo. But the thing that still stands is what is called a little memo, the FinCEN memo. And that came down from the Department of Treasury in February of 2014, and they issued another memo kind of similar to the Cole memo that at least purported to clarify the Bank Secrecy Act expectations for banks, for financial institutions that wanted to provide services to marijuana-related businesses. And no one has touched that FinCEN memo since it was issued. And because of that, there are some brave bankers out there and some brave privately owned credit unions that are starting to bank cannabis clients. And it's kind of interesting.
I want to work backwards on this for just a second. Now, the fact that some banks are federally licensed and some are state licensed, is a bank that is state licensed able to make a transaction within a state where marijuana is legal?
Well, even banks that are state licensed have FDIC insured funds, unless you are a credit union. And interestingly, so they are regulated. I have a new friend I've met through this industry who is president and CEO of a privately held credit union in Denver. And she has implemented for that private credit union a banking system for people in the cannabis industry. And it's called the Safe Harbor Program.
And, interesting.
It really is. You know, she was a banker for over 30 years. Her name is Sundy Seafried. And Sundy was about to retire, and the credit union approached her about taking on this project. And she meets regularly with regulators to keep them apprised of what's going on, and she complies with the 7 due diligence activities that this FinCEN memo sets out for banks. And it's a perfect example in the banking realm of kind of the hypocrisy and the looking the other way that can occur even with the federal government, because it's illegal there, and yet they have this FinCEN memo, and if you're able to comply with these requirements in that memo and you are transparent, that's a buzzword these days, isn't it? If you have a lot of transparency and you meet regularly with the regulators, then chances are very good that you're going to be okay if you are a banker or a private credit union, which is what they have in Denver. And so I think we're going to see more of this. But quite honestly, I also believe that we're not going to see, especially the larger banks and the credit card networks like Visa and MasterCard and Discover and American Express, they're not going to get on board until Congress takes action to do something and remove marijuana as a schedule from the Schedule One classification that it currently has.
When you mentioned about them meeting with the regulators, now, are these regulators, I'm assuming they're federal.
They're all federal.
Okay, so they're not state regulators. It would definitely be federal regulators. So within, and could you give us just some highlights? I'm not familiar with the thin memo.
Oh, okay. Well, it's really an interesting document, and it came through the Department of the Treasury, the Financial Crimes Enforcement Network, and that's abbreviated FinCEN. So the memo that they issued has come to be known as the FinCEN memo. And it didn't really have a formal title, but the subject line said that it was about BSA, which is Banking Secrecy Act, expectations regarding marijuana-related businesses. And it was very interesting, and it didn't receive, I don't believe, nearly the publicity that the Cole memo did.
When we come back from this time out, we're going to continue with our guest, Sarah Lee Parrish, who sounds like she might have spent some time in Norman, Oklahoma.
Yes.
Not normal Oklahoma. That's in Illinois. Norman, Oklahoma, at the University of Oklahoma. We're Rod and Ray, and this is
Daybreak USA.
Good to have you with us. We're Rod and Ray on the radio with our guest, Sarah Lee Gossett Parrish. And she specializes, it's almost like a new form of law, even though it's been around for 1,000 years, and that is the marijuana laws in this country. Welcome back, Sarah. Thank you for being with us again.
Mm-hmm.
And a question for you. There's a lot of similarities here in the marijuana industry that are also in the a computer gaming industry, where computer gaming is not allowed to accept credit cards in the United States. So they have third-party companies that are in the Grand Caicos or Antigua or in Israel or in Korea or somewhere to handle that. Is that one way that maybe some companies will get around the same problem in the marijuana industry?
You know, that's an excellent question. I think that that is probably less of a possibility in the marijuana industry simply because of the expanding opportunities to bank with private credit unions and to pursue other avenues. But it certainly is out there as a possibility for some businesses, but I know that most of them, especially among my clients, are really looking for a bank or a private credit union to streamline everything and make it much easier when you get into those other kinds of banking-esque situations. It just tends to complicate matters so much.
And, well, you know, first of all, once again, now you're talking about if you're in the state of Nevada, the state of Colorado, the state of California, you're buying a legal product and you're not able to access your own money to purchase it. Doesn't it still say on the money that it's good for all debts, public and private.
But that's cash. That's not credit cards. Don't say that.
But
or
it's kind
debit
of inferred
cards.
When I put my money that says that into their bank.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. Any thoughts on that?
Well, and I think you have an excellent point when it comes to credit cards. There's not a right in that regard. And when you put your money in the bank, you have to sign all of these agreements, or you have to agree to them. I'm sure no one ever reads them. They're voluminous and they're tiny little print, and no one ever even thinks about it. But those kinds of agreements contain provisions that must comply with federal law. And kind of the startling headliner in the whole banking issue for cannabis in our country is the fact that it still remains illegal under federal law. But, you know, it's very interesting. I was in Washington, D.C. in August. The National Cannabis Bar Association, of which I'm a member, they're a great group of people, had some meetings up there, and we had the privilege of meeting with some members of our Congressional Cannabis Caucus from both sides of the aisle. And it was very interesting. Yes. And a couple of them assured me personally that they believe Congress, this 106th Congress, which will be coming in after the November midterms, is going to do something to act on this, to either provide a safe harbor to businesses and financial institutions in states that have legalized cannabis to some extent, whether medicinally, recreationally. They either think that, or they think Congress will act to get it off the Schedule One designation that it currently has. So I was encouraged to hear that.
Yes.
Who would have thought that Cheech and Chong had law degrees? Go ahead.
Oh, that's just kind of scary.
I know that movie, those characters, they were hilarious.
Are we,
yeah,
as both of you, yeah, no kidding. Isn't that a scary thought? But, you know, the Schedule One classification for marijuana, are we even close to having that removed? And that I know is a key provision in things changing.
Well, and I think in that regard, it depends on who you are speaking with as to whether they believe we are close to that or not. I think
there's certainly support
in Congress on both sides of the aisle. And I also think part of the reason for that is that people, for example, Oklahomans, when we passed our state question 788, that initiative was for the medicinal use of marijuana here in the state. And people are coming to realize that the plant really does have legitimate and important medicinal values. And, I'm sorry, go ahead. No.
Oh, I was just, you know what, we have to have you back and follow this legislation along. If you'll do that, if you'll come back and see us, because I have so many more questions, and I would like to talk about your book as well. Sarah, quickly.
I'd love to come back.
Oh, I hope so. I have questions about the HBD products, and are they on the Schedule One, or is that something entirely different?
Are you thinking the CBD, the cannabinoid?
I'm sorry, CBD, yes.
No,
exactly.
That's okay. And, you know, that is a whole separate issue. Those are primarily derived from the hemp plant, which is a cousin to marijuana. And as you may have heard, the DEA has issued or published a final order that's going to place one particular drug that is derived from CBD in the Schedule 5 versus the Schedule 1 portion of the Controlled Substances Act. So that's
awesome
as well.
Sarah, we got so many more questions. We're going to have to do this again real soon. Thanks for joining us. The website, www.sarahleegossettparish.com. We're Rod and Ray, and this is
Daybreak USA.